Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
We see problems with the depreciation reports. I mentioned a couple of times cost segregation. As an investor, you may go and get that cost segregation report done and you hand it to your CPA. If your CPA doesn't know what to do with it, you can lose out on a lot of deductions from that.
Welcome to the Best Ever CRE Show, the world's longest running daily commercial real estate podcast. If you want real stories behind the good, the bad, and the worst ever deals, plus insights into what really goes on in the commercial real estate investing, you're in the right place. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to uncover secrets and strategies you can use to become a better, more informed investor. This is the Best Ever CRE Show.
Hey, Best Ever listeners, welcome to the Best Ever CRE Show. I'm Amanda Cruz, joined by Ash Patel. How's it going, Ash?
Amanda, doing very well, and hello, Best Ever listeners.
Today, Ash and I are joined with today's guest, Shauna Weekerling, aka Shauna the Tax Goddess. She's joining us from Paradise Valley, Arizona. She is the founder of the Tax Goddess Business Services. They help businesses and entrepreneurs minimize their tax liabilities strategically to save clients as much money as legally possible. Shauna, thank you for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you so much. And I'm impressed that you took an attempt at that last name. No one ever gets it right. It's Weckerling. So all good, but I'm impressed at the attempt.
You know what? That is definitely not our specialty. We'll stick with CRE, I think.
Sounds like a good idea.
Tell us a little bit about what you and your business do.
Yeah, so we are what are called a tax mitigation specialist. So probably the best way to describe this, there are 660,000 CPAs, according to Google. There are only 607 of us that specialize in tax strategy. And out of the 607, we are ranked in the top three. They refuse to tell us who's number one every year. It's quite a competition between us in the top three. But yeah, our job is to reduce your taxes legally, above board. Now, of course, anybody in real estate, you guys already know the basics, right? Your cost segs, your 1031s, these kinds of things. What we're looking at is you've made even more money than those items. And how do we get that tax bill down to our current average of 6.92% in tax rates for our clients?
Sure. The tax goddess, that's a bold claim.
Yes, it is.
How do you back that up?
Well, last year, we were at $1.725 billion in savings for our clients. As I mentioned, average tax rate, 6.92%. Although the last three tax plans we delivered were all 0% in taxes. So hopefully my average came down a little bit, which will make me happy. And of course, it's just an honor from that standpoint. We get called into places like Forbes, Entrepreneur, because nobody wants to pay taxes. So it seems to be a hot topic no matter what is happening in the world.
Do you have a focus on real estate or do you just do business owners? I'm assuming you can't do much for your average W-2 high earner.
You know, you'd be surprised. So the way to think about this, right now we're looking at a little over 1,900 strategies. Now, it's not 1,900 for every single use case, right? Because they don't all apply, right? Let's take cost seg for real estate, for example, won't help you if you're a high earning W-2, okay? But we have strategies for W-2, we have strategies for business owners. About 40% of our practice is real estate. So we've got quite a few real estate specific strategies. And then there are some strategies that just automatically go across. It doesn't matter what business or what you do. So for example, if you're a real estate professional, or if you own a small business, or if you're a doctor, all of those categories can write off their dog. You just have to know how and which way. And where do you put it so that you are doing everything legal and above board? So it's really, when we look at strategies, we try to customize them very specifically to the person. So everybody's different.
I was going to ask you, our audience knows the basics. I was going to ask you what the biggest mistakes real estate people make. However, you preempted that question with writing off a dog. How is that even possible?
I can tell you one of the biggest mistakes is trying to do it without the proper instruction, but I love it. All right, so let's back up. Real estate specific on how to write off
the dog. No. Let's start with the dog.
Oh, sorry. My bad. I meant the real estate industry, right? I have a dog. I want to write off the dog. So let me give you some background so we can kind of understand the case study that we're looking at. So I have two German Shepherds. a Cane Corso Great Dane, and 2 55-pound mutts. So I have 5 total dogs. There are court cases that specifically state that if the dog has a business purpose, so we're going to come back to that here because this is dependent on the business. If there's a business purpose, if the dog meets certain requirements, so the dog needs to either be one of the protection type breeds or a medical service breed. There's breed restrictions. There's also size restrictions. So typically the dog's shoulder has to be taller than the height of your knee for the shortest person in the business or in the family, depending on where we're looking. Got to have that business purpose. And the dog has to be trained. Now, this is always one of my favorite parts about this specific write-off, but also everything in the tax code. There's some areas that are black. There's some areas that are white, but there's a whole lot of gray. The word trained, Will, is that Schutzhund training can go like nail the guy coming out of a police car, or is that sit, stay calm? The court cases weren't clear. It just said trained. So if we were to apply this situation specifically to, let's say, a real estate investor, you're going to go collect rents. So you're going to your apartment building, you're going to collect rents. Maybe your apartment building's not in the best neighborhood. Is your dog with you? Would it protect you if somebody tried to do something? Is it coming with you for a business purpose? It's protecting you while you're trying to collect rents? Yeah. And now, is it a Chihuahua? Maybe not so much. Okay. Is it a Pitbull, German Shepherd, Great Dane, any of those? All good. So a lot of the tax code and almost every single strategy that you look at, the answer is always, it depends, because it depends on the situation. Who are you? What are you doing? Why are you doing it? Why should it be a business write-off? Those kinds.
Very creative. And I'm envisioning, instead of the dog having a service dog vest, it'll say rent collection animal.
Like, marketing, that's awesome. Advertising. Yeah.
Do things like this automatically trigger audits?
No, the deduction itself is not what automatically creates an audit. Now, I hope I could be a little bit direct, a little bit blunt on the podcast. Don't do stupid things. So on your tax return, you don't say, my dog, Bob, the rent collector. No, don't do stupid things. But
security, just write it off as security.
Write it off as security. Now, this brings up a good question. Sometimes dollar amounts can trigger flags. So let's say for the past 5 years, your security bill has been $300 per year or whatever, and all of a sudden your security bill goes up to $25,000 because you just bought a purebred German Shepherd, Schutzhund, whatever. They may come ask you about that. So you better be prepared to have those records and have why. Why is that a business expense? And there are 3 key words if there's ever an audit, because you could be audited for any reason, right? There's 3 key words when it comes to looking at that. Is it ordinary? Is it necessary? And is it reasonable? So is it ordinary that you have security to protect you while you're carrying around $50,000 in cash? Yeah. It could have been Brinks. It could have been the security dog. Totally reasonable. Ordinary. Okay. And necessary. Are you in Scottsdale, Arizona, where nobody's going to bother you? Or are you in deep down South Phoenix, where security dog might be a good idea? So just depends.
Shauna, how do you get to these conversations with your clients? That's a pretty far level down where, hey, do you happen to have a dog that goes with you to your real estate? What does your intake process look like here?
Yes, I literally just got goosebumps because you nailed on the head the one thing that people absolutely hate about working with Tax Goddess. In order for us to do an amazing job for you, our team needs to become you. I need to know, what kind of dog do you have? Where do your kids go to school? Is it private school, public school? What do they eat for lunch? Does your spouse stay home? The more data we have, the better your deductions become. So certainly from that standpoint, so the intake process is pretty lengthy. Writing these kinds of plans, they're typically 300 to 800 pages. They take 12 to 16 months to write. So we'll give you things to do right off the bat. We know you're a real estate person. You haven't done CostSeg. You're a real estate professional. Go now, right? But there are some things where we just need a lot of detail to be able to figure out. Kids in private school, perfect example. Many parents don't know that if you have a business, if you have a rental property, whatever, you can pay the child. The child can pay for private school because there's only 3 things the parents themselves are required to pay, which is food, clothing, and shelter. So if your 16-year-old wants a car, make the kid work a job to get the money, you get a deduction, and the kid gets their car, and you've trained your child financial responsibility. So you're right. You're 100% right. This level of detail is not something we can just figure out on a 5-minute phone call. And what strategies are going to work for what person?
back to the private school. So you pay the kid. The kid pays their own private school, but is a limit $12,500 per year that's allowable?
Let's talk about it. So it did go up, right? Every year it changes. So that's always something to take a look at. The current maximum that we're working with our clients on is around $23,000. And that $23,000 would be the non-taxable amount. So let me give a good example of a child that's maybe 14 in private school versus a child that's maybe 20 in college. Two very different kind of rules. So the $23,000 number right now is made up of two numbers. It's made up of the standard deduction for any person, and it's made up of a $7,000 traditional IRA contribution. Now, that combination puts us up to $23,000. The child does need to do a job that you would pay some other person $23,000 to do. So your 14-year-old can go empty the trash cans and shred and go get the mail and scan and do all these things, but they have to actually do the job. Where a lot of parents get tripped up is either they don't do a proper job. The IRS will not be happy if you just pay the kid 23 grand. They have to do a job, but you are allowed to pay children the same amount that you would pay any other individual to do that job. So for example, if your 14-year-old is better at no longer TikTok, is better at YouTube, better at Instagram, better at Facebook than you are, paying an SEO specialist to do those kinds of things is $130 an hour. So great, pay the 14-year-old as an SEO specialist as long as they're doing that kind of work. Now, parents, when the kids start to get to college, the kids get even more expensive because now we've got college and we've got living expenses and we potentially got a car and some food allowance and they want to go to the movies once a week or whatever, right? And parents are nice. So same thing, but I've got one client paying the kid $125,000 a year. That kid is paying for their own college, paying for all of their own stuff. The family is getting a deduction through the business to be able to take that deduction. So there's a million ways to skin that cat. And it's really about what are the family needs? What kind of jobs can the kids do? Do they actually do the job? Because we see that like, oh yeah, they're getting paid. If the IRS ever looks at that, they're not actually doing the job, we're going to have a problem.
So when it comes to audits, you want somebody like you on your side because you can talk the talk. You can back up what you vouch for. And what's your experience with audits? Have you been through many of them?
Yes. So we've been through 9 audits. Now, out of those 9, only 3 of them were ours. So you pick up a client, they got an audit for a previous year. Of the 3 that we've had, 2 of them were no change, and 1 of them only changed by $1,000. So basically, I call that a flat-out win.
Yeah, I've been through a couple audits, and I think it's important to share. The IRS, first and foremost, is looking for you hiding revenue. My advice to everybody, look, go in the gray area with expenses, but I don't care if tenants pay you in cash, always claim it. Do not ever try to hide revenue. So once they get over that hump and they realize you're not a blatant criminal by hiding revenue, that's when they come after you and try to look at your expenses. I got dinged because my meals and entertainment was through the roof relative to other real estate investors. And I kind of explained to them that, look, we do a lot of entertaining with investors and partners and whatnot. So that kind of flew. Receipts were a very big thing. They always want receipts for absolutely everything. And that's their way into an audit. Have you experienced that?
Absolutely. So this is why you keep hearing me talk about what's the documentation? What is the kid doing, right? It's all about crossing the T's, dotting the I's. So one of the things we tell clients is, listen, I can tell you exactly what to do. YouTube can tell you exactly what to do. But those two things are going to be very different from the standpoint of YouTube is a 3-minute video saying, pay your kids. Ours is a 15-page, step 1, step 2, step 3, step 4, step 5, documentation. So we will get some people who, no matter how much they want to save money, they don't want to do the documentation. And that's okay. It just means that you're taking the risk. We'll tell you, but you're taking the risk that if the IRS comes back and says no, then it's a no.
What are the biggest mistakes that real estate people specifically make when you look at their tax returns? What are we leaving on the table?
One of the biggest things that I see is not properly understanding the differences between the various statuses. There's passive versus active. There's material versus non-material. There's also different kind of passive, active, and then real estate professional status. And what are the qualifications for each one? And how do you make sure that you're into one status if that's really where you want to be? We also see problems specifically with when should an Airbnb be a Schedule E versus a Schedule C. We see problems with the depreciation reports. I've mentioned a couple of times cost segregation. As an investor, you may go and get that cost segregation report done and you hand it to your CPA. If your CPA doesn't know what to do with it, you can lose out on a lot of deductions from that standpoint. We had a case where the mistake by the investor is not working with somebody who specializes in the industry. That'd be a big one.
What deductions do you often put in place other than going and getting a cost seg or running up thousands of dollars at bar tabs? Other than those things, what are real estate investors often missing out on that you're like, go do this?
And for the record, you're probably on some of my receipts as your name because you've been on some of those bar tabs. Okay.
Some of the ones that we see that are most missed, let's go with that. It's no longer meals and entertainment. Right now, it's just meals. But most people don't realize that there's three classifications of meals. There's 100% meal, 50% meal, and travel meals. And if you and your bookkeeper are not segregating those, your CPA will assume everything is 50% meals, and you'll be losing out, especially if you're spending as much as that.
Please tell us more. I did not know this.
I love it.
Where are we going with this?
I like it. So let me explain travel first, because it's the easiest one to explain. So I live in Paradise Valley, Arizona. If I travel more than 50 miles away from my tax home, which would be Paradise Valley, Arizona, there is a special travel category for travel. So more than 50 miles, it's called per diem. So with per diem meals, per diem says, okay, if I'm from Arizona and I go to New York to go look at one of my properties, because I'm away, New York has specific rates for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So last time I looked at the per diem for New York City proper, lunch was $37. If I only spend $7 getting a slice on the pizza guy at the corner, I can still write off $37, even though I only actually spent $7. So if you do a lot of travel, per diem meals can be a big thing for you.
Sean, a quick thing on tactical there. I'm out and about in New York City. I get a $7 slice of pizza, but I say it's per diem. Do I just categorize that as per diem and basically pay myself the money?
No, not quite. I love it. Thank you for asking a tactical question. That was perfect. No, what ends up happening, the per diem rates are what's taken on your tax return. So you don't get to actually reimburse yourself the cash. That's a different type of write-off. But on your tax return, when you give that set of bookkeeping to your tax preparer, definitely put it in a category that says per diem. And in the notes, you want to say New York City breakfast, New York City lunch. This is where that detailed documentation really comes in. So listen, if you're only traveling 5, 10, 20 days a year, this probably won't make a lot of sense for you because you either get per diem or you get actual. So if Ash is at the restaurants where he's having these rather large bills, he's more likely to do that at home. Maybe, I don't know, maybe you're out and about doing it, but you're more likely to be at home. So when you're at home, the other two categories, so you have travel, and then the other two categories are the 100% and the 50%. Now, 50% and 100%, these categories change almost every single year. And it's kind of annoying to all of the accountants and the tax preparers and whatever else, because we have to tell you guys, well, what is it this year? Because perfect example, in 2023, 50% meals included any kind of meal with my staff. But in 2024, any kind of meal with my staff became a 100% meal. So first things first, now you got documentation headaches. So question there. But the major difference between a 50% meal, if whatever meal you have is falling under that 50% category, if you spend $100, you can only write off 50. If you spend $150, you can only write off 75. So it's 50% of whatever that meal is. You did mention, and so now I just have to bring it up. You did mention the bar tab. Alcohol is not deductible under any cases, any circumstances. Eyebrows just went up, so don't even bother. Okay, that like is a whole separate category. Yeah, Nash, I'm not your tax preparer, honey.
I didn't know that.
You want. Yes. Alcohol is not deductible under any circumstances. Actually, I lie. It is deductible under one circumstance. One, if your doctor gives you a prescription. Now, I know that sounds weird, but perfect example here. You're an alcoholic. You're trying to get out of being an alcoholic, but you have to do things to be able to do that. If you have a medical reason, that's a different matter, but it's a very specific. So most of the time, not deductible. 100% meals are when you have prospects, vendors, client meetings, okay, educational events. So it's more about the event itself kind of thing. So that would be a perfect example. A lot of real estate people are in mastermind groups and they may have everybody over to their home. So we also need to talk about the master's exemption because that's the other big one that gets missed. But they have everybody over to their home. They're throwing an event. You buy food and platters and trays and whatever that you're going to have for the event. That's all 100% meal deduction.
Perfect segue for the Augusta rule that you just brought up.
That's right.
Yeah, one of my favorites, it always surprises me that people, I guess it has become so popular over the past 3 or 4 years, so it always surprises me when people haven't heard it. So let's back up. The main rule, sometimes it's called the master's exemption, the Augusta rule, I've heard it called section 280, you name it, it's got a million names. And if anybody listening has connected those two dots, Augusta and master, yes, it was specifically written by the congressmen and senators to help themselves because they owned homes around Augusta, Georgia, where the master's event is held. So the basic of the law says that you are allowed to rent out any property you own. We're saying that very slowly because it's specific. Any property you own that has a bedroom, a bathroom, and a kitchen. So think boats, think RVs, think tiny homes, right? Bedroom, bathroom, kitchen. You're allowed to rent it for up to 14 days a year, and any rental under 14 and under is not taxable. Now, a lot of people will use this if you happen to have a property that is right next to the Rose Bowl or the Super Bowl or whatever, right? You can get $100,000 worth of rent in a week because you're right next to the stadium or whatever it is. But many people don't have that specific case scenario. So where we more likely see it is I'm a real estate investor and I'm having my mastermind group over to my home. And we're doing a mastermind about how to do financing, an educational event, whatever that mastermind's about. My business can pay me to rent my home from me. And that means I get 14 days of tax-free, whatever that rental income is, completely tax-free. And that tax-free income is a deduction for my business.
Is that 14 per property?
Per property.
Oh,
which means if
wow.
you own a cabin, it's 14. If you own a primary, it's 14. If you own a boat, it's 14. This can add up real quick. And the biggest area, so you would ask me, well, what are the mistakes that you see people do? Two big ones. First of all, in order to do that with yourself, your business must be separate from yourself. So if you don't have an LLC, if you don't have an S-Corp, if you don't have a partnership, you can't do this. The IRS gets cranky about that. And secondly, people often undercharge for rent. So what we tell clients to do is wherever your home is, whatever property it is that we're working on, you start making telephone calls to the conference centers and the hotels around you, as close as you can get to you within a reasonable amount of distance. And you say, listen, my home is 2,000 square feet and I need to host an event and I'm going to knock the bedrooms out. I'm going to knock the private bathroom out. I'm only going to use the public space. So that's 800 square feet. And if I were to come to your hotel and I wanted to rent an 800 square foot ballroom to host this event, how much would that cost me? Now, not food, because that's separate, that's under your meals, but how much would that rent cost me? What I have seen people do is they go to Airbnb and they say, oh, well, the house three doors down is renting their Airbnb per night for $150 a night. You can do that, but you're effectively wasting the total amount of tax-free rent that you'd be able to get. You're not having your mastermind group sleep in your bedroom overnight. That's not what's happening. You would be hosting a conference at a conference center. So what is the fee to hold a conference at a conference center for a 4-hour mastermind? And often when people actually take the time to do that research, the best example, the lowest end I've ever seen was about 500. He was way out in the middle of nowhere. So there were no conference centers near him, which is why the rate was so low. One of the highest ones we've ever seen at this point is $23,800 in New York City. So that's a lot of money.
And along with that, any of the expenses that go along with hosting that event are also write-offs, right?
Absolutely. Except for the alcohol, but yes.
I love it. More masterminds in 2025 coming for real estate 100%. Investors. Shona, when I hear this, I'm thinking, I have bookkeeping nightmares already. Plus, I have a CPA. So how do you fit in with that full picture?
So we don't prepare tax returns. We don't do bookkeeping, right? Our job is basically a coach. We're a guide. We teach you how to do it, when to do it, how to do it, checklist items, all the pieces. It's our job to tell you what to do, but you and your team have to implement it. So what often happens is clients had a relationship with their bookkeeper and their CPA for 20 years. Love them. They trust them. They know them. They know all my files. We would never want to break up a happy home. We're super happy about that. So what ends up happening is client calls us and says, listen, love my guy not getting strategy. I want strategy. We go through everything. We come back and we say, okay, listen, looks like we can save you about $400,000 a year. We have three packages, which I can go over. Plan fee is going to be whatever the package is. And do you want to go or not? Now, at that point, people will often make the decision, listen, sounds good. I'm happy. Let's go. And I'll get my CPA on board. Or they will say, can I bring the CPA to a meeting and we can run through it together? Because you trust your CPA and you trust the guidance of your CPA. And that's 100% acceptable. So if the CPA comes, we get one of two reactions. Either, oh my God, best thing I've ever heard. I've never had time to research and hear the court cases and do all these things. I'm so happy to have you on the team. This is going to be amazing.
Or the other reaction is, who does this lady think she is? How does she think she knows more than me? I'm licensed.
100%. And listen, honey, so am I. I'm CPA, master's in tax, CTC,
oh,
CTS,
let's
CTA.
Go. Like, let's go.
You want to bring it? Let's bring it, right? Which is helpful for people because I understand there's a lot of fly-by-nights. Like, yeah, I'm a tax strategist. What's the background? I'm ex-KPMG. I've been doing it for 25 years. Let's talk. So that helps other CPAs either accept it, or you're right, Ash, absolutely not. I don't know about that. I'm not doing that. In which case, my job, I'm not beholden to the CPA, I'm beholden to you. You are the client. You are the one that I am a fiduciary to. If you want a different CPA referral, we'd be happy to give you one. But if you want to stay, that's okay. Do the strategies that that CPA that you love and trust will allow you to do, because there's an aggression scale here. So we coined this term, aggression scale, 0 to 10. 0 meaning the IRS never calls you, never ever, but you're leaving money on the table. 10 meaning we're all going to jail. And what I always tell people is, listen, I'm a redhead. Red and orange don't look good together. I will go up to an 8, maybe an 8.5. If you're way out to left field, I will tell you to find a different strategist. I've got other clients. I'm not going to jail either. We're not doing that. So as a taxpayer, you yourself as the client, you, and if you're married, your spouse, you need to understand what your aggression scale is. Because most of the time, my business owners, my entrepreneurs, they're coming in and they're saying, listen, I'm a 7, 8. And one guy tell me a 20. I'm like, pull it back, brother. Otherwise, we're not doing this. You're going to have to go somewhere else. And the other spouse might be a 2 or a 3. Maybe they're a W-2 and they're a little more conservative. We can blend the rate. We can go to a 5. But it's you and it's your family and it's your strategy and it's your money. Where do you want to be? So if you come back at a 5 and we will go as high as an 8 and your CPA is a -4, you make the choice. We're not going to force you to do anything, but it's your money. So choose what you want to do.
What number is it if you don't want to go to prison, but you're okay doing a weekend in county jail?
8.7? I don't know. It's probably the way we describe it. So 10 is going to jail. 9 is Al Capone doing shady stuff that is wrong and just hoping you're not getting caught. And an 8, that's really kind of where you want to be.
Thinking from a high level, we put so much reliance on our CPAs. And for years, I had a very conservative CPA, got through an audit with no corrections, but I left a lot of money on the table. And I always tell people, get a CPA who's also a real estate investor. If you're a real estate investor, right? If that's what your business is. But I don't think many of us ever heard of people like you. So how do we find someone like you? How do we find you?
Well, I'm pretty easy. That's why everybody just calls me the tax goddess. taxgoddess.com. So we're super easy to find. But yeah, there is actually an organization. So if you come look at Tax Goddess and you're like, well, I want somebody local or whatever. As I mentioned, there's only 607 people that are certified in the entire country to do what we do. Those people are called CTC, Certified Tax Coach, 3 letters. There's an organization out of California, the AICTP, as in Certified Tax Professional, and they rank us, they give all the information, the contact information, all of those kinds of things. And way earlier, it said we're ranked. Those are the people that rank us.
Shauna, what is the name of your company? I'm assuming we can definitely find you by Googling Shauna the Tax Goddess, but is there a company name that we can also look you up by?
Tax Goddess. Literally,
okay.
Very easy
to find.
Very easy to find. Yes, that was an interesting story and how I ended up with that name, but it's been a good name for the past. Last year was our 20th anniversary, so it's been a great name for the past 20 years. So.
Shauna, I saw this sheet for the interview today and I'm like, oh my God, the Tax Goddess. This ought to be interesting. That was a bold claim. You certainly backed it up. What an absolute pleasure. I have 2 pages of notes that I wrote down. You've saved me a lot of money. I'm sure our best ever listeners got a lot out of this as well. So thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I love talking about this. It's my passion, and I'm definitely a tax nerd. So I really appreciate you giving me a chance to chat about it.
Our pleasure.
Shauna, thank you for joining us today. And best ever listeners, thank you for joining in. If you got something out of this episode, make sure you leave us a 5-star review and share it with somebody else who should be saving money on taxes. Please follow, subscribe, and have a best ever day.